Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on looking at economic reality when we come back. Now, you know, when you have an income of $50,000 a year, which is about where the median average is, you're paying $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're self-employed and you're paying that 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and then pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of that $50,000 twice? But you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of the original $50,000 in Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of that same $50,000 in income tax. Now that means that you're paying 17% on that $7,650 twice. Now that's a little bookkeeping trick that steals an extra $1,300 from you and from everyone that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears or Penny's or your credit card company charged you twice, like Social Security and the IRS does? Now, isn't that just real special? Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. You can call 417-273-4967 and ask for it, or you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget? All right, we've been talking about this thing of economic reality. We have two numbers. We have the government's numbers, and then we have shadow stats numbers. So if you go to shadowstats.com, they're still keeping track of official government numbers by the way we've traditionally kept them, the real numbers. But we also have a second set of numbers, numbers that are more politically palatable, the numbers that the government wants you to know or wants you to believe. These numbers are about as phony as $3 bills. Let me give you an illustration. The official unemployment rate today is 8.9%. Well, as of last month, we don't know what it's going to be when the new numbers come out this month, but 8.9%. And that, they're telling us, is pretty bad. But it only tells part of the story. They have a process that they arrive at that number, and it's called the birth-death model. It was during the Clinton years that they came up with this birth-death model. I don't know how it works, but the reports from all of the professionals that tell us how phony it is tell us that this birth-death model, during this period of unprecedented unemployment numbers, is telling us that, for instance, construction is adding 120,000 jobs every quarter or every month, and that various sectors of the economy are actually adding jobs. That's what the birth-death model tells us, at the very same time that the Department of Employment is reporting on the unprecedented new claims for unemployment insurance. Now, to get a handle on where the truth is, you have to have the numbers from both sides of the camp and then ask yourself, well, which numbers make most sense or which numbers add up? So let's take a look at the way unemployment is actually handled and what we know the government admits to, and then what Shadow Stats tells us, and then what the newsletters report on, and then what does Brian Williams and Katie Couric and Charlie Gibson report on. And then let's sift through this and see if we can't come to a conclusion. We have a number here that's called the U6 unemployment number. And what that includes is the people who went in yesterday and signed up for unemployment. And they've got 13 weeks of unemployment. Now, in extreme cases, and from time to time, they'll double that from 13 to 26 weeks. And then when there's a big bad recession on, sometimes they'll extend that out for a year. So depending upon what state you're living in and what the climate is, your unemployment benefits are going to run 13, 26, or 52 weeks. Now, you go down and you sign up for unemployment. Let's suppose that you were unemployed last October, October of 2008. So you had October, November, and December. Then you had January, February, and March. And now we're into April, May, and June. So if you're going to get 52 weeks, then they're going to take you on up from June to July, August, and September. All right, so let's go with the whole year. That's about the most you're going to get. That means that if you're drawing unemployment right now, you're in that 8.9%. They've got you counted. You're covered, partner. 8.9% are currently unemployed and looking for work. What they don't tell you is that if you drew your unemployment insurance and exhausted your benefits, but you still didn't find a job, you're no longer counted. And there's a great big bunch of people out here in the United States that have run out of unemployment benefits and haven't found a job either. And they're not being counted. Now there's another group over here. Let's suppose that you're a college professor and you weren't tenured and you were laid off. And so now you went out and found a job driving taxi cab. Now you're not a professional taxi cab driver and you really don't want to drive taxi cab, but you're not counted as unemployed as a history professor at the university. You're counted as employed because you're driving a taxi cab. And so as a result of that, you can be out here looking for a job in your field, but you can't find a job in your field, but you can find a job flipping burgers, or you found a job driving taxi cab or doing something else, which is not in your field, and you're not counted as underemployed or unemployed. You're counted as employed. How do you like that? So in the old days, we used to count people a little differently. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, we had a way to count people, and then because the unemployment rates and because of the political ramifications of unemployment are so great, the Clinton administration came up with this birth-death model, and it's about as phony as a $3 bill. That's what everybody that's in the underground newsletter business is writing. I don't understand it 100%, but I understand enough of it here to see that it's political. It's not economic. That's the point that I'm making. That we have the politicians now skewing the numbers to make it more palatable for us. And this has been going on now, not just from President Bush or President Obama. It's a continuation of a process that began during the Clinton years. All right, now that's number one. Now, I'm sitting here at the desk running down the list of problems that we face. Now, remember I said, let's take a look at economic reality. Take a look at the subprime real estate. The problems in the world today that we're looking at were caused by this subprime real estate collapse. As I speak, there are 19 million homes on the market. Now, what that tells you is that if you need to sell your house, let's suppose that you live in Jacksonville, Florida, and you want to move to Sacramento, California because of your job or for whatever reason, and you need to put your house on the market in Jacksonville, Florida, there's 19 million houses nationwide that are already on the market. Now, irrespective of whether or not you can get financing for your house over here, just the competitive pressure alone says that it's going to be a while before you sell your house. That's number one. And number two, it's going to be an effect on the price that you're going to get for your house. Now, of these 19 million houses, not all of them have been foreclosed on, but the majority of them have. And the banks are out here, they're putting these houses on the market. Now, one good thing, the banks have more than 19 million houses that they've foreclosed on, but they haven't put them on the market yet. And because they're not on the market, they're not even being counted. Because the banks, they can understand also that if they put too many houses on the market too fast, it depresses the market even further and faster. And what everybody's trying to do is to hold the prices up. Nobody wants their house price to go down to the bottom. So we're talking in terms on the mainstream media. Have we reached the bottom yet? Oh my God, have we reached the bottom yet? Oh, we think we're about to the bottom. Okay. At the same time that you're putting money into circulation, you're creating more money and putting it into circulation so that you can keep the prices up. Now, you talk about Jekyll and Hyde here. On the one hand, we're trying to find the bottom of this economic cycle, and we're just working our hearts out trying to prevent it from ever appearing. Now, if back in last September, October, when this thing started, if you'd have left everything alone, it would have collapsed in short order. About 30 to 60 days, you'd have been on the bottom, and then you'd know where the bottom was. But Henry Paulson went to Congress and he said, hey, we got to have $700 billion. And President Bush said, okay, well, that sounds good to me. President Obama walked in the door the other day and he said he needed $700 billion for a stimulus package. And over the last 6 or 8 months, they've added, the last number I saw was $12.9 trillion to the money system. And when you add up all the guarantees and stimulus packages and the bailouts and all together, add it all up, it's $29.1 trillion been added in the last 6-8 months. Not just direct cash like $700 billion here and $700 billion there, but you went to Fannie Mae and you went to AIG and you bailed them out, and then you guaranteed it. See, and you haven't given them the money yet, but you guaranteed that if there's any problems in the future, you're going to pay it. Now, you're on the hook now for $29.1 trillion. Now, I've counted up 20 problems here. I'm going to give these 20 problems. Any one of these problems would collapse the economy, and you got 20 of them all working simultaneously against you. And you think you're going to bail this ship out, do you? That's why I said I think it's time that we took off of our rose-colored glasses and took a look at economic reality the way it really is. There isn't any saving this ship. Any one of these items that I'm going to tell you about here, including this unemployment thing over here, would sink our ship. But we're being hit by a cascading wave after wave after wave of these economic dilemmas, economic realities that of and by themselves would collapse our economy, but we're going to get all 20 of them, we're getting all 20 of them all at the same time, and they're on us right now. So now the question arises, well, what do we do? Now, what does Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife do? Don't worry about Henry Paulson, Ben Bernanke, and Tim Gaither, or President Obama. Those guys are taking care of themselves. They're busily out here looting the Treasury right now at your expense. Those guys are going to make it through just fine. But I'm not so sure about the waitresses and the truck drivers and the electricians and the carpenters and the plumbers and all those other guys out here at the bottom of the pond. As the trickle-down theory works, you know, we're down here at the bottom eating the scraps and paying all the bills and guaranteeing all the bailouts. And then when it comes time for us to get some relief, there isn't any relief out there to give. All right, so going back here to your 19 million homes, when you go to sell your house, you're going to have to discount it steeply in order to get it sold, and you're competing against 19 million houses. Now, there's a second factor in here that you didn't know about. take a look at all of the economic upheaval that is going on right now in front of your eyeballs. And then ask yourself what caused that. And the answer is it's the subprime real estate market that collapsed. All right? There's two more real estate markets out there that haven't collapsed yet but are going to. The next one that's going to be bigger than the last one is called the Alt-A real estate market, and that begins in June. So you count back 36 months from June of 2009, and you go back here 36 months to about June of 2006, and there were a lot of loans made back in 06 and 07 and into 08. And those loans are coming up for a reset. The interest rates are going to reset. And those aren't subprime loans. Those weren't loans made to just warm bodies. Those were loans made to guys like you and me and everybody else. We went out and we bought into the program or the idea that real estate never goes down, it only goes up. And as a result of that, we put a swimming pool in the backyard, put a second mortgage on our house. We used our house like an ATM. And we borrowed a lot of money against it. And as a result of that, those loans are coming up for reset, just like the subprime loans, at the very same time that we're losing our jobs at the rate of a half a million a month. So if you are still working, you're probably still making your mortgage payments, but your mortgage payments are going to double. Now, are you ready for this? Now, let's suppose that your mortgage doubles and you're able to cover that doubling of your payment because you're working. But let's suppose you lose your job. Then what do you think is going to happen? Well, obviously, you're not going to make your payments. I mean, that's where reality is located. Now, as the unemployment problem deepens, let's take a look at unemployment, which was number 13 here on my list. The U6 number right now stands at 19.2%, and as we saw yesterday, this is what we call depression territory. Now, depending upon who you're talking to, I saw a number here in the privateer, it was 15 point something, and I saw a number in the international forecaster, Bob Chapman, puts that paper out, and he put the number at 19.2%. So I don't know any more than Will Rogers knew. He said he got all of his information out of the newspaper. I'm getting my information out of the newspaper, the underground papers, and shadow stats. And the numbers that we're able to come up with run somewhere between 15 point something and 19 point something. And boys and girls, that's already depression territory. And it's still growing at a half a million a month. And here's one more little number here on unemployment. We have to create 120,000 jobs a month just to keep pace with the population increase. So, assuming that the economy was just cooking along, just business as usual, you have to create 100,000 plus jobs a month, and that's just for the population increase. And now you're in a recession, and in order to put you people back to work, we got to come up with something more than that. And we're not only not coming up with something more than 100,000 or 120 or 150,000 a month for the population increase, but we're losing a half a million a month. And that's been going on for the last 6 months. And then in April, they said, well, it looks like it's starting to turn around, because in March, we lost 680,000 jobs, but in April, we only lost 515,000 jobs, and so the rate of decline is slackening, which is about like riding on the Titanic and saying, well, the water was coming in at the rate of 680,000 gallons a minute, but now we've got some more pumps on it, and now it's only coming in at the rate of 515,000 gallons a minute. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, that means that instead of sinking in 2 hours and 20 minutes, it's going to be 3 hours and 40 minutes before we sink. Well, is it going to change the overall outcome? Well, no, it's not going to change the overall outcome, but it's going to take longer. Now, the stimulus packages that are being put into place are like putting pumps on a sinking ship. It certainly does prolong the agony, and it isn't going to happen as fast, and it gives us a little bit more time to work out a better plan. But the overall effect is going to be the same. All right. So now, if you said, well, then the stimulus plans are well worth putting into place. Well, okay, maybe they are. I wouldn't argue that. I'm just pointing out that economic reality tells us that the great ship America and our economy is doomed. And the sooner we recognize that it's doomed, we can get on with then how do we get off the ship. Because you see, on the Titanic, when it first hit the iceberg and people were wondering, well, what happened? You know, all of the officials, all of the pursers and the captain and crew were telling people, I'm going back to your stateroom, back to bed, everything's fine. Well, here on the great ship America, everything isn't fine. You've got problems here that's going to doom the ship, and the sooner you get after it, the better it's going to be for you. But I'm not here to convince you that I'm right and you're wrong and that you need to do something. I don't care what you do. As a reporter, my job is to report facts, and that's what I'm doing. And what I'm observing here is that the mainstream media isn't reporting all of the facts. They're reporting facts. I don't deny that, but they're not reporting all the facts. They're not giving you the bad, really bad news. Now, the Alt-A real estate oven by itself, that is the upcoming round over the next 36 months of mortgages that are going to be resetting automatically based upon the contract that you signed back in 2006, 7, and 8, are going to be coming up over the next 36 months, and they total three times as many bad real estate loans that were made in the subprime market. So the subprime market was made to poor people, and it collapsed, and it caused our present problem. Now we have the Alt-A real estate problem coming up, which was made to the people who weren't poor, who were middle class, but also overextended themselves. And as they lose their jobs, they won't be able to make their payments, and their houses are going to be added to the foreclosed houses that are already there. And if we are desperately struggling to keep our heads above water with the subprime real estate collapse, what in the hell do you think we're going to do when the Alt-A real estate market collapses? Huh? Then what are you going to do? And it's going to be two to three times worse than the real estate collapse that we've already suffered. Now, there's one more here. So you got subprime real estate number one, Alt-A number two. There's another real estate market out here that maybe you hadn't heard of that is in the process of collapse, and it's called the commercial real estate market, and it's already down by 40%. 40%. Where the bottom to that one is, we don't know. But when you go into the mall, start taking a look at the vacancies in your local mall. How many stores are vacant? Now, I haven't been into a mall for a while, so I guess maybe I need to take a look and see how Battlefield Mall's doing here in Springfield. But as I drive up and down the streets, I find a number of businesses are now closed, especially restaurants. They've closed their doors. They've closed their doors because there's not enough people out there eating in the restaurants to support them. It's discretionary income. So businesses that are discretionary income oriented are the ones that are going to go first. So if you're in some kind of a business over here where people's discretionary income, you know, something other than food, clothing, and shelter, which everybody has to have every day, food, clothing, and shelter, if you're in something else other than that, well, then it may well be that you should start thinking about your ship sinking and kind of up front. All right, so commercial real estate is in collapse, or it's in decline. It hasn't totally collapsed yet, but rents are going down. And in some locations, the rents have been knocked off as much as 25%. Now, here's what's bad about that. Normally, when you buy a building and you're renting it out, there's a formula that we follow in buying real estate. And we presume that there's going to be a vacancy factor. And we usually plug that in at about 5%. And depending upon what kind of real estate you're dealing with, maybe you might go as high as 10. But I don't know of anybody that plans on 25%. And a 25% rent reduction is equivalent to a 25% vacancy factor. I mean, that's what it boils down to. If I could keep my rents at $100, I would keep them at $100. In fact, I'd raise it to $105 if I could get away with it. But when my vacancy factor goes up, I have to lower my rents in order to attract people into my building or to compete with the guy down the street who's lowering his rents. So by the time I lower my rents to $75, that translates into about a 25% decline in my revenue. Now, I've budgeted in 10%. But if it goes up to 25, then I'm in deficit by 15. If I'm in deficit, then I'm unable to make my payments. So either one, I've got to defer maintenance, and I've got to defer payments or profits. Or in the worst case scenario, I have to default on the mortgage. And so sometimes you can go to the mortgage holder and you can say, listen, because of the economy, do you want to repossess the property and sell it to somebody else? Or do you want me to stay here and manage and operate and let's renegotiate the terms of our contract? Now, the bank is going to be loath to knock 25% off of the mortgage price. So what they'll say is, well, okay, we'll roll it over depending upon your equity position and stretch these payments out a little longer. That helps them and it helps you, and maybe you can do that. So you got three real estate markets here. You got the subprime real estate, Alt-A real estate, and commercial real estate. All three of them are in the pits. And any one of them, oven by itself, would collapse our economy. But now we've got all three, coupled with unemployment. The unemployment becomes a killer because if people are employed, they'll make their payments. But when they're unemployed, they can't make their payments. And so take a look at a 500,000 people becoming unemployed in the month of May. That's another 500,000. Well, that 500,000 people, two-thirds of them own homes. Of that two-thirds that own homes, one-third of them are free and clear. So if you own your own home, you lose your job, you're free and clear, that's not a problem for you and it's not a problem for the economy. But if you're one of the two-thirds of Americans that have a mortgage on your house and you've lost your job, you're going to quit making your mortgage payments. I mean, just reality tells us that. And when you make your last mortgage payment, then you're going to start counting the months, one, two, three, until there's a foreclosure. And then the foreclosure comes. Now, not only does this pose a problem as to where you're going to live next, but it poses a problem for the overall economy because remember the guy down in Jacksonville, Florida? You got 19 million houses on the market today. What are you going to do when you have 38 million houses on the market or you have 56 million houses on the market? I mean, you know, there's bad news ahead for all of us when it comes down to, well, how much is your house going to sell for? Now, I don't know where the bottom of the market is. I don't know where it's going to terminate, but it's been going down, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40%. Now, the overall house price in America from the peak in 2006 or 7 is down about 40%. And the gurus here are telling us that it's probably going to go down another 20%. That would be 60 total. And it could go down as much as 80%. Now, let's try this on for size. Let's suppose that your house at the peak of the market was worth a 500,000, and that's where you bought in at. So you bought in this house and you got 500,000 here. And if it goes down by half, then your house is worth 250,000 and you're underwater by 250,000. Now, do you want to stay here and pay off a $500,000 mortgage on a $250,000 house? Let's try it another way. Now, let's suppose you need to refinance this $250,000 house, but you owe $500,000 on it. What lender is going to lend you $500,000 to buy a $250,000 house at a lower interest rate? You see where we're going with this? That isn't going to fly. You're not going to do that. The lender isn't going to do that. And so that compounds our dilemma, doesn't it? Then you come up with the real estate collapse in Alt-A and commercial real estate, and then you start putting all of that pressure on the banks, and what do you think is going to happen? And while you're mulling that one over, let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not eight schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing and recommending are necessarily going to reciprocate. We should keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on The Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by The Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about The Law Hour and Editorial Review, then we invite you to go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, taking a look at economic reality. Now, that covers our real estate. Now, we have another big problem here in the United States that would sink our ship all by itself at some point in time, but it's coming to a head, and it's called the balance of payments deficit. Balance of payments. Countries in the world, just like you and I and everybody else, buy, sell, and trade among ourselves. So, you know, you work as an architect, and you get a paycheck, and you take your paycheck and you deposit it in the bank, and then you take a certain portion of that and you spend it on food and a certain portion on your mortgage and car payments and everything else. In other words, you're buying cars and buying houses and buying food and clothes and buying gasoline and all these things that you're buying. That's trade. And the people that you're buying from depend upon your trade, just like you depend upon their trading with you in order for you to get your paycheck. You, in turn, are very important to them. You're a customer, and so you're buying gasoline, and that guy that's selling you the gasoline, he needs that sale so that he can make a profit, so that he can go down and buy groceries just like you do. All right, now, when we do this among nations, it's just bigger. Instead of hauling it home in the trunk of your car, you're hauling it home in a ship. And so when we buy a shipload of oil from Saudi Arabia, that's important to them. They need to sell that oil so they can pay their bills. Now, when we take a look at our balance of payments, let's suppose that you're making $1,000 a month, but you're actually spending $1,100 a month. You're taking on debt. You're adding on to your credit card, and you're actually living $1,100 a month, but you're only making $1,000. How long can that go on? Well, you know, at $100 a month, it probably could go on for a long time. Now, we Americans have been doing this for a long time. We've been running these trade deficits now for about 40 years. Now, people have had confidence in us. In other words, we owe the Saudi Arabians, let's say, $1 billion. And they say, well, the Americans are very wealthy, and $1 billion to them is chicken feed. And our money is safe, and the Americans are paying us interest, and so we're happy to hold their debt paper. And this goes on around the world and so on. But now our debts around the world has made us the world's number one debtor nation. And now we're getting to a point where we've been making our payments now. Up until now, we've been making our payments and making our interest payments, but we're getting to the point where we can't do that. And there will come a point in time when we won't be able to make our payments. And this is typically where people file for bankruptcy, when they get to the point where they can no longer service their debt. And that's where America's at. We're at the point where we can't service all of this debt. So we're going to have some kind of a change here. And so our public officials, our Secretary of the Treasury and Ben Bernanke, Helicopter Ben, they call him, are working hard over here to try to do what they have to do in order to reschedule this debt. And so our Secretary of State was over talking to the Chinese, we owe them $1 trillion, and over talking to the Japanese, we owe them $1 trillion, and you know, over talking to various people over here about, now, we got a compounding problem because our president is out here spending money hand over fist and stimulating the economy. So we, in the past, and I don't know what the number is today, but in the past, we needed $2 billion a day being lent to us by foreigners around the world. We're borrowing $2 billion a day so that we can continue to make our payments, which is about the equivalent of you taking one of your credit cards and using that credit card to make the payments on your other credit cards. You're getting down to desperation status now. And that's where America's at. We're in desperation mode. And we're out here borrowing money from everybody in the world at the rate of $2 billion a day. Now, with these stimulus packages that have been added on, it's more than $2 billion a day. I don't know what the new number is going to be, but it's going to be something like $4 or $6 billion a day. $4 or $6 billion a day. Now, this sends a bad signal to your creditors. It says to your creditors, hey, wait a minute. They're using their credit cards now to make the payments on their other credit cards. So that tells us that they're not making enough money on their job to service their debt. So they have to borrow the interest to service their debt. That means they can't pay the interest, and they won't be able to pay the principal. Do we want to lend them any more? Now, the answer is going to be at some point in time, no, it hasn't happened yet, but it's coming, and when it does, it's going to sink our ship. And here's what the deficit is. We're importing $800 billion a year, and we're exporting $200 billion a year, and when reality hits us, we're going to be put on COD, and the $200 billion that we're exporting will balance $200 billion worth of imports, which means we're going to take a $600 billion hit on our standard of living. Now, to put that into perspective, you just take 8, subtract 2, that leaves 6, 2, 4, 6, 8. Now, we're going to maintain 2 out of 8, that's 25. We're going to take a 75% hit. Let's try it this way. You just take the way you live your life today and cut that by 75%, and then ask yourself, is that going to be fun? Because that's where we're going. That's where we're going. So today, you know, you're living in a nice house. Well, forget the nice house because you're going to be leaving your nice house. Now, if you're unemployed and living on unemployment insurance, how much gasoline are you going to buy and how many Princess Cruises are you going to take? And how about that trip to the Grand Canyon? It's been on your mind for a long time. Hey, you can just write all that off. Trips to Disneyland are gone. Six Flags is gone. Grand Canyon's gone. And Princess Cruise is gone. And that's a no-brainer. And then we're going to have to start talking about, well, are we going to be eating out very much? Are we going to be eating over here at Steak and Ale, or are we going to be eating at McDonald's, or are we going to be eating at home? I mean, that's where reality is located, so get used to it. Now, that's called your balance of payments deficit. Now, leaving that one aside, leaving aside the subprime Alt-A, balance of payments and unemployment, and your commercial real estate. Just leave all that aside, and let's just take a look at our national debt, our national budget, and the national deficit. The president went to Congress the other day, and he got another $700 billion. Remember, George Bush did that. He got $700 billion. Now, President Obama got $700 billion. They're going to go out and they're going to spend this and create jobs. The president says he wants to create 4 million jobs. Now, to show you what's happened between 2002, well, I'll say 2001 with 9/11 and the present, we have lost in this country 10.1 million jobs. 10.1 million. These jobs have been exported to China and around the world. They've been exported by way of your bank. For instance, I have a daughter. And she was given the task of training an Indian woman who came over here from India to take her place at the bank and then go back to India and perform her duties by long-distance telephone and satellite in India. That's called outsourcing. All right. Now, my daughter went out and found another job in another bank doing something else, but just to point out, her job at that bank at that time had been outsourced. That's good for India. I don't deny that. That's one, and it's good for the bank because they were paying my daughter, I don't know, $80,000 a year. And by getting this Indian lady to come over here to America, learn how to do this job, and then go back to India and do it by telephone, maybe they're going to pay this woman in India $10,000. And it's going to save the bank $70,000. That's good for the bank. I don't begrudge the bank doing that. But it's not good for my daughter because it took her job away, number one. It took $70,000 worth of income out of the United States. That's the other side of the coin. And then that same bank more than likely went broke anyway, making these subprime and Alt-A real estate loans to start with, and then you and I have to come bail them out on top of it. So they send the job off to India, which deprives us of the $70,000, and then they come to us and say, well, now that you're unemployed, we want you to pay taxes and bail us out, or go on the hook and promise to pay this. Huh? Does that make sense to you? Well, that's what's going on. Now, this national debt, as I speak, stands at around $12 trillion. Then we've got the national budget. That's $3 trillion a year, and the president has added to that a $2 trillion deficit. So we're making $3 trillion, and we're going to spend $5. How do you like that? Now, the tragedy of it is our income tax revenues have gone down 14%, so the government's taking in 14% less money and spending 40% more. Now, that oven by itself is going to take us down, but it's worse than that. The budget deficit, as of the last newsletter I got here, and I think it was from the Privateer, said that we had already spent, in the first 8 months of fiscal 2009, $2 trillion. We got four more months to go, so it looks like we're going to spend another trillion over the next 4 months, which means that the budget is $3 trillion and the deficit is $3 trillion. What do you think of that? Now, where are we going to get the $3 trillion? Remember, we're borrowing $2 billion a day from the people around the world, aren't we? Okay. So if you're a truck driver and you say, well, this is higher finance, and we'll just leave it up to the paid professionals. After all, that's what they're getting paid for. Well, wait a minute, Tony. Tony, hey, wake up here, man. It's okay. You still got a job and you're driving your truck, but let's pay attention to reality here, and let's start looking at economic reality. How much money is there out there in the world to borrow? Has anybody ever asked that question? Because there's an answer to that. if you take all the countries in the world, there's 209 people in the world that's in this international trade business, 209 countries, and they're buying, selling, and trading. And the total amount that they buy, sell, and trade is $44 trillion a year. You know, let's round it off to $50 trillion just to, you know, make it easy for you to count. So the whole world does about $50 trillion, and we Americans do about $14 trillion of that. That's an exaggeration, but, you know, well. So just take 15, 30, 45. America does about one-third of the world's business. Just us, all by ourselves. We do about a third of it. Round numbers, and all the rest of the world does the other two-thirds. Now, the whole total ball of wax is $44 trillion, and when you get all through, how much of that is savings that can be lent to somebody else? And the answer is $1 trillion a year, total. Now, you're not going to borrow it from we here in America because we're already up over our heads in debt. We don't have any savings at all. Our savings are minus in this country. But there are some people in the world that are saving. The Chinese, Japanese, Germans. There are countries in the world that actually make a little profit and have a little money left over at the end of the day. And those countries are funding our deficits here. Now, let's think about this. There's $44 trillion a year in business. $1 trillion of it is in savings, and Americans need to borrow $3 trillion for 2009, but there's only $1 trillion out there to borrow. Huh? You know, look, even if you're a truck driver, a waitress, or a gum-smacking housewife, a desperate housewife, can't you do the arithmetic on that? There isn't enough money out there in the world to borrow to cover these deficits. All right, so this takes on what we call monetization. So the governments just create this money right out of thin air. They just print it up, stick it in a computer, an electronic transfer some, and then they go out and spend it. Now, when they do that, when they're spending that, they're taking the real goods, that is the pinto beans, the wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. They're taking it right off the shelves at Walmart. And as you take that stuff off the shelves at Walmart, then there's less of it because there's more of us that are unemployed and we're not working in those factories. Can you follow that? All right. Now, that being the case, we're producing less and consuming more. Where do you think that's going to lead? You know, an oven by itself, that would sink our ship. But, hey, we're not done yet. So now we've talked about the subprime real estate. That's going to sink our ship. The Altay real estate's going to sink our ship. The balance of payments going to sink our ship. The national debt, national budget, national deficit's going to sink our ship. Commercial real estate will sink the ship, and unemployment will sink the ship. And we got all of them working all at the same time, which led the privateer to make this observation. Remember last night we talked about this. We are in depression territory. The United States is literally, week by week, living on borrowed time. And the alarm bells are getting loud, and there is an epic-making U.S. financial debacle ahead of us. Now, that's pretty powerful language, which is why I recommend the privateer, because this fella Buckler has a very neat way of educating people to economics. Very plain, very straightforward. If you're a housewife, you know, a waitress, just common Joe Sixpack and Sally housewife, you can understand this newsletter. It's not written in economic terms that are just designed, you know, for the Secretary of the Treasury. These are economic terms that you can understand. Boys and girls, the statement that says this is genuine depression territory is just about as plain and upfront and in your face as you can get. And the statement that says the United States is literally week by week living on borrowed time, hey, even I can understand that as dumb as I am. And how about this one? The alarm bells are getting loud. Hey, we can all grasp that one, can't we? And there is an epic-making U.S. financial debacle right ahead of us. Now, I've only covered six here so far. I've covered six. We got 20. We still got 14 more to go, any one of which is going to sink our ship. This ship is doomed. If you think the great ship America and the economy of the world is going to pull out of this one, boy, you get your head up the wrong end here, Tom. So let's pay attention here, get this name and number down. This is called The Privateer. It's a newsletter, and it comes out of Queensland, Australia. Queensland, Australia. It isn't written in Australian. It's written in English. You can understand it. You probably couldn't understand this guy if he was talking to you, but when he puts his language on paper, you can understand him. And here's his name. It's William Buckler, B-U-C-K-L-E-R, Post Office Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. That's two words, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia, P.O. Box 2004. Now, they've also got a web page, www.the-privateer.com. They've got an email. That's CAPT. That's the captain. CAPT at the-privateer.com. They also have a phone number. The number is 617-5471-1960. So that number again is 617-5471-1960. Now, the value of the privateer is $180 Australian per year, comes out twice a month, 12 pages. They've got a page in here on Australia, they've got a page on U.S. markets, a page on Europe, and so on. And they tell you what the latest numbers are, tell you here's where it's really at, right up front and in your face, plain language, easy to understand, so that you can stay abreast of what's going on. Now, why is this important for you? Well, because the captain and the crew here on the Great Ship America are telling you, go back to your stateroom. Everything's going to be fine. Just relax. Everything isn't fine. Everything isn't going to be fine. And it's going to get worse and worse and hairier, and actions need to be taken if you're going to save yourself off the Great Ship America. Now, of course, if you're resigned to death, well, stay right where you're at. Go back to your stateroom and just relax. It'll come over time. Now, there's a second newsletter here. I'm going to give you the name and address to. It's called the International Forecaster. You might as well get it down. It's about $160 a year. Both of these are underpriced. They're overvalued and underpriced. If you were paying double or triple that, the information that you get out of these two newsletters is worth double or triple what they charge. I know Brian Williams is free, but then you get what you pay for. I mean, that's where reality is at. If you want oats that you can eat, then you need to pay for them. If you want the oats after they've gone through the horse, they're a lot cheaper. And if you want the oats after they've gone through the mainstream media horse, well, they are cheaper. All right, now the International Forecaster is published twice a week. That's 8 issues a month. And it's also bigger by about double. So the newsletter from the International Forecaster is going to be in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 pages twice a week. And it's much more technical, much more detailed. And it's also much more difficult to grasp and understand. And that's because it's written on a higher level. It's written for people that are in investments. And I got to tell you that if you're a truck driver, a housewife, you're going to have problems reading some of it. Not all of it. Now, Chapman's pretty straightforward and up and right in your face also. And in those sections of the forecaster where it's right up and in your face, and this is, let me tell you where the bear does it, you'll be able to understand that. It's very, very plain, straightforward. But there are a lot of technical portions of the newsletter that are just beyond me. I can read it, and I look at those, the DAC and the ALTs and all of these acronyms in here, and I don't know what the hell he's talking about. And when we get down to the technicals, you know, the purchasing manager's reports for Hungary, I can kind of read over those. I'm really not concerned about the PPI in the Czech Republic. I kind of scan through it, and once in a while I'll actually think about the consumer price index in Romania, and he's got a lot of that in there. But again, there's probably half of the international forecast. Remember, this thing now is 30 pages. I'm just looking at one right here. The May 20th edition is 30 pages. Out of that 30 pages over there, about 15 pages of it's just kind of up and in your face. Let me tell you where it's at. Just plain dialogue that you can understand. I don't care who you are. So the international forecaster is well worth it. Don't be discouraged by the technical reports. Just, you know, scan over those and forget those. You can live without them. If you can grasp them, if you're gonna invest, you know, you're gonna buy stocks and bonds, and you wanna invest in currencies, and you wanna know what the price of a dollar versus a euro versus a Swiss franc, you know, is worth. Probably the technical portion is probably important to you, but I'm not into that, and so it's really not that that important. All right, now here's Bob Chapman's name and numbers. Post Office Box 510518, 510518, Punta Gorda, Florida. And the zip code is 33951-0518. Now, you got to have all nine numbers here on this one. And this is what we call in this country zip plus four. And the zip code 33951 will get you to Punta Gorda, Florida. But if you don't have 0518 on there, you won't get in his post office box. So you got to have his zip plus four. Now, again, that's 33951-0518. Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida. All right, that's the international forecaster, $160 a year. Underpriced by at least 50%. Bob Chapman is the guy's name. So you got those two down? All right, now I've plugged those two newsletters in for you. Now, let's take a look at another topic here. We have a thing called the bond market. And this bond market over here is in the early stages of collapse. And American bonds are now insured for more than McDonald's. That's right. You see, we used to think of America as being a Class A credit rating, 3A credit rating. Okay, it isn't that way anymore. The McDonald's Restaurant Corporation now has a higher credit rating than the United States of America. That's not good, boys and girls. So if you're in a bonds, you know, stocks and bonds, they call them. If you're in American bonds, you have bonds issued by the United States of America. I just wanted to let you know that they're not as good as McDonald's. Now, I don't know how good McDonald's is. They're probably real good. And now we find out that they're better than U.S. savings bonds. So I wanted to pass that one on to you so that you could take the appropriate action. If you have these U.S. bonds, it may want to give you pause. I'm not telling you to sell them, not telling you to buy them, not telling you what to do, just wanted to point it out. McDonald's is safer than U.S. bonds. Hey, I'm about out of time. I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.